We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Folks, it's the Thursday edition of College Sports Now, a podcast that you've come to expect phenomenal college basketball content from. I'm Stephen Hartzell. Michael Cerber in the house with us at L_Cerberino on Twitter. He's a social media sensation. Follow him if you aren't already. Speaking of social media sensations, Matt Norlander from CBS Sports is in the house with us. Norlander, I got to be honest with you, man. Like, I've been watching the HQ hits in the morning. You're getting a little sweat in on the treadmill, just trying to absorb, you know, the college basketball news as it happens. Obviously, it was a busy week with the Chris Mack news coming out of Louisville. We will get to that shortly. But yeah, Everyone on this show is preparing for a massive winter event that is bearing down on the Mid-Atlantic, which affects me and Cerber, as well as the Northeast, which affects you, Norlander. So how is the preparation going, folks? How are we feeling getting ready for a winter event over the next 48 hours?
The preparation is, well, it hasn't yet begun, but after we do the show, I guess it'll have to start. I wanted to get into the grocery store today. Don't know if that's going to be achievable with other work and life things, so I might be reduced to a Friday grocery store run the weekend before, the day before, and evidently a bomb cyclone is going to hit the Northeast. Did you see the tweet that went viral from NBCNews.com? Where,
no.
I think, you know what? I think we've hit a level where these social media managers, they know exactly what they're doing, and they're writing things intentionally with wanting to get dunked on. Did you see this tweet that said the Northeast or New York City will get anywhere between 2 and 20 inches of snow? Did we see this? 2 and 20.
Yeah, that's quite a range. Yeah, spectacular.
Come on now. What are we doing here? So anyway, we're doing okay. I think we'll be fine, but pushing off this grocery store run by another day.
Can I give you some silver lining here, some good news, Norlander? The stuff that you and your family are eating, there will be plenty of that at the grocery store. You don't have to worry about them being sold out of, you know, these elite, bougie, flax granola bars. There will be plenty of those. Yeah. It's the corn pops you got to worry about. It's the frosted flakes. It's the white bread. You know what I'm saying? Like the non-organic
We go Dave's Killer White Bread. Are you familiar with the Dave's Killer
that
brand?
That stuff is $13 a loaf, my man. I mean, it is outrageous. Good for you.
We'll get to hoops any second here, I'm sure. But a little peek into the household here. My wife, for almost as long as I've known her, it's not like we do not have our diets and our cabinets in our fridge, and we've never gone to Whole Foods. We're not that, but she tries to buy as clean as possible, and so she is aware of the breads that have good stuff in it and the breads that it's like, you're not allowed to bring that into the house. So apparently Dave's Killer White Bread is the only acceptable white bread that we're allowed to actually get. So, and it's not 13 a loaf. It's not cheap. I'm furious at how much these groceries are costing, man. I in college, early to mid-aughts, really early aughts, you know, when I was with my buddies in the dorm, you could go, four guys living in a two-bedroom dorm. I remember it was $100 would get you food to last for 2 weeks. Now, you're eating in college, it's a little more lean. That is not the case these days, not even close. And so times, they have changed, and we are as prepared as we possibly can be. And I'm excited for the weekend ahead regardless, because the kids love playing in snow, and we have a pretty nice weekend of college hoops, which we'll obviously preview a little later in the show.
Well, speaking of kids playing in the snow, Serber, how are you preparing for this winter event that is, again, bearing down on the Piedmont of North Carolina?
Hartzell, they're forecasting 0.7 inches of snow here.
That's a problem, buddy.
I'm prepared just by existing. I breathe. Do you hear that?
Yeah,
I'm continuing to breathe oxygen. Hang on.
You got batteries? You got enough stuff? You got water?
Hang on. You hear that? That's water. I won't die of thirst. And honestly, I think the 0.7 inches will hang me up for about 2.5 hours. So any food I may need, I could probably just go get later in the day.
Here's the thing, man.
I'm fine.
If they've underestimated this, I mean, if you tack two or three inches on top of that forecast, we got problems. I mean, we got
3.7 inches. Oh boy.
Yeah, it's a problem, man.
You have to stop, Hartzell. You have a problem.
There were three boxes of family-sized corn pops left at the grocery store. I took two of them. I was courteous for my
Can't
neighbor.
Be having corn pops,
I left one box, but I did take two of those bad boys home with me. By the way, you talked about groceries, and we will talk basketball after this. How much you think a box? This is family size. This is the big boy box. One box, family size corn pops.
$6.
In North Carolina,
I'm saying $6.50.
It was $6.49 a box.
Oh.
How do you do?
Do
this
I win on the
later?
Price is Right, or do I lose because I was 1 cent over?
This is not
from whatever they call it when you're with everyone and you're guessing. I'm talking if you're playing like the game once you've won and you're on the stage. I think that's a win.
No, Showcase Showdown. If you go over, you go. No, I think you're right. Showcase Showdown. If you're
I'm not talking Showcase Showdown. I'm talking you're in one of these games where you got to guess the price of the groceries. I think you can go over when it comes to that.
Well, if you're on the Price is Right and you go over, you lose. So
no matter the game, you can't go over.
I'm pretty sure you cannot go over no matter what.
I think that's why somebody always loses a buck. Yeah.
And I lose.
Either way, what's happening.
That's outrageous, and corn pops suck. So I don't know what you're doing to yourself.
Oh, God.
They do.
Accurate
Come
statement.
On, man.
Get him, Norlander.
We will save the cereal
waxy,
talk.
Stale ass, can't believe it existed past 1996 type cereal here.
Wow,
get out of here with
this. That's quite a take coming from a guy who keeps Kashi in business. Okay, phenomenal take by you, Norlander. Let's talk basketball. Chris Mack, no longer the head coach at Louisville. Norlander, you've been on this from the jump. I want to say, if we go back and check the tape on Monday, this might have been kind of danced around a little bit just in terms of coaches who are underperforming based on preseason expectations, blah, blah, blah. So, look, mutual parting of the ways. He's out. Louisville has not had a banner season by their, albeit lofty standards. They're 11-9. They're 5-5 in the ACC. But this was a hire. Correct me if I'm wrong. But this was a hire that when he came from Xavier, people were like, slam dunk hire. Can't miss hire. This was the right move. So what went wrong, and why are they doing this in January instead of, 2 months from now when the season's over?
Yeah, it's been, things are kind of calm here now on Thursday morning. But, geez, most of Tuesday and then all of Wednesday, as the story evolved, and it went from Louisville's going to have a meeting with its board of trustees and members of the athletic association, which is just another body that represents the athletic department. Louisville runs its stuff a little bit different than a lot of other universities. And then, so it's Chris Mack is seemingly going to be out. Now, in order for him to be out, it needs to be, agreed upon in a formal way. And then eventually got to that point, and Mack talked with reporters on Wednesday. And then, yes, I reported that the settlement was $4.8 million. Louisville subsequently confirmed that with an official release on Thursday night. Mack's buyout was $12 million if he was to be fired. So to your big picture questions, how did we get here? Here's what I know, and I have not, efforts to get any sort of comment from Chris Mack went unrequited so far, and that's to be expected there. But he did speak with local media, and I thought he actually had a lot of good things to say. And I thought, you know, if people thought that Chris Mack was, you know, enraged and pissed off and whatever, he disproved that with how he handled himself and what he said to local media on Wednesday in advance of that official vote coming down. My understanding is that this was largely mutual, that Chris Mack did not resist this severing. Things had gotten untenable. I think Chris Mack had been pretty stressed and uneasy over the situation with his team for weeks. And this is my conjecture. It might even just date back to the entire season, because he was suspended for the first six games this season because in the offseason, like last April, when Chris Mack, after having just barely missed the tournament, Louisville was the first team out of the field of 68 and was a surprising snub, relatively. Like, there weren't a lot of people projecting Louisville to miss the tournament, but they did. He decides to remove Dino Gaudio from his staff and Luke Murray from his staff. Dino Gaudio essentially was one of Chris Mack's mentors, dating back to when he was recruited by Gaudio all those years back to go and play at Xavier. So, like, a ton of weird dynamics there. And, you know, we haven't really talked about it on this podcast because it happened in the offseason, but almost everyone listening has to be familiar with it at this point, so I'm not going to go too deep into it. But Dino Gaudio essentially was completely blindsided by Chris Mack's decision to not renew his contract. Dino Gaudio is in his 60s. He thought he might have had just a couple more years left, get a little bit more money, ease into retirement, and he was basically like, you can't do this to me. Like, you know, this is, you know, A, B, C, and D, and I'm going to go and, you know, I'm going to tell people what's been going on in this program. And he's alluding to level two violations and stuff like that. Well, that's, you know, amounts to what was eventually determined. Like, he was charged with an extortion attempt. Now, he pleaded guilty, had probation and all that stuff. But the Chris Mack secretly recorded that conversation, and then he had to turn it over because he needed to make sure he was protected. But in doing all of that, oh, by the way, Dino Gaudio was making allegations that roped Louisville into even more, you know, NCAA, into more, a deeper NCAA hell. So all that happened in the offseason. Louisville suspended Mack for six games for, I think, both violating university policy, like there wasn't an HR representative there when he didn't renew the contract and all this, and then the level two violations, you know, they just, all those issues led to him not even coaching the first six games. So that set a bad tone. Louisville has been really bad as of late. And Chris Mack is, I'm not going to call him as normal of a human being as any head coach out there. I'm not saying that's the case, because a lot of different kind of personalities coach men's Division I college basketball, and some of them are quirky, some of them are really intense, some of them are hilarious, some of them are just normal, everyday kind of dudes. Chris Mack was fairly normal with that, but also, like, he has a strong, you know, sharp competitive edge. And I think because he's been really, he's never been shy about sharing, like, who he is outside of the world of basketball, has tweeted often, shared photos and videos of what it's like to be a dad with his daughters, and he's got a son who's now 6 years old, his wife. Like, he was not a private public figure at his time at Xavier as a head coach and at his time at Louisville as a head coach. And that, frankly, had served him well plenty of times in terms of just becoming more well-known, getting good press. He has strong relationships with some media members. I would include myself in that group. But I think he just took a step back and was like, you know what? This is not working out. And do I want to continue to struggle through this season when it's not to the betterment of many people in and around this program? And so, as he said on Wednesday, Hartzell, he holds no bitterness. You know, he said he was still rooting for Louisville. Like, I really appreciated everything Chris Mack said, because it seemed to have come from the heart, and he seems to have done this with good intentions. And he probably knows that if Louisville sought to fire him for cause and wanted to cite some violations within the program, there was a chance he would walk away with nothing. But since this was amicable and he walked hand in hand with the university, I don't know who prompted it. I don't know if Chris Mack, because when Mark Turgeon did it, he prompted it. I don't know if Chris Mack prompted this or if there had been one or two conversations over the past 2 weeks and then one of the two parties said, let's just figure this out after they lost against Virginia. So I know I'm a little long on my answer here, but I think the context is important. And after a 68-37 run, Chris Mack is out. And we can talk candidates if you want a second here. If we don't, we don't have to as well, whatever, either way. But I'm not convinced that no matter who succeeds Chris Mack and is the head coach at Louisville next season, that we will look up and 100 games into that coach's career, Chris Mack basically coached 100 games, they will have a better win percentage than Chris Mack had. I don't know. Maybe it'll happen, but I do want to be clear. This is not a flameout. It is a bad season this season, but Louisville made the tournament as a 7 seed in his first season. Had we had a 2020 NCAA tournament, Louisville would have probably landed on the 3 line, and that means you're probably getting to the second weekend. No guarantee of anything, but still. Last season, barely missed the tournament. The season's gone sideways. So it was not a disastrous hire. It wasn't. It's ending in a bad way. Doesn't even get to the end of the year 4. But he was universally seen as like the guy. And it is the latest reminder. And we tell ourselves this every single time, but it's worth repeating. Like every season or every other season, be it in either football or men's college basketball, there will be a coach that gets fired or, you know, resigns in disgrace, neither of those two things apply to Mac here, but you get what I'm saying, where we look back and we say, man, 3, 5, 7 years ago, this guy was like the number one or number two most championed, heralded hire of that cycle, and it just didn't work out. So let's just keep that in mind permanently going forward. When Ohio State hires the next coach, and if it's a coach with a great track record, that's a great hire, always keep in mind that there is a negative outcome that is on the table, and we'll see where Matt goes from here. I think he eventually coaches again, but I think it's at least 2 years before that happens.
So that's well put. You know, he provides some good context there. I'm curious, before we talk about like candidates, because it's kind of early, but how good of a job is Louisville? I mean, nationally and then within the ACC. I mean, is it a top tier job in the ACC, if you're ranking gigs in that conference?
Yeah, I mean, so it's generally
it's
speaking,
with,
yes.
So you're putting Duke, Carolina, and Louisville in the same tier?
No, they're different tiers. They're different tiers. Two ways to answer that question, though, Hartzell. Because Louisville right now has been a mess going on a decade plus, just in terms of that athletic department. Again, on the football side, Bobby Petrino stuff, the Rick Pitino stuff. Now this, it doesn't have a sitting president or athletic director. I mentioned this I did like a YouTube only video, 15-minute special for CBS on Wednesday. And it's important to know that if you don't have a permanent athletic director and president, like that actually can impede progress of your overall institution. And when you get into the athletic end of it and hiring, like it makes it complicated. So the next hire will be done by the interim athletic director at Louisville. I'm told that a new AD landing at Louisville is like not happening, probably not happening before March gets here. Doesn't seem like that's going to be the case whatsoever. The president, I was told Louisville getting a new president is not until like the fall at the earliest. So like these are just, you know, when you are a coach that has credibility and would be courted by a Louisville, it can sometimes make the process for a Louisville that much more difficult, because there would be good enough reason to say, if I got options, do I want to walk into this situation there? The ceiling is high. In normal times, Louisville is objectively one of the 10 best jobs in the country because of the arena it plays in, the city, the state, how much it loves college basketball. Yes, it's number 2 in the state to Kentucky and always will be, but For all the mess and dysfunction, that athletic department has actually been one of the more profitable ones, and Louisville has among the best budgets for men's college basketball, or at least has over the past 10 years. So the promise is high. How good is the job right now? I don't think you can say in the moment it's a top 10 job because of the circumstances that surround it, but it's still high level. No, it's not on the level of Duke and Carolina. It's not on the level of Kentucky or Kansas. But even in the state it's in right now, I still think it's top 15. And I say that not only as a personal belief, but having talked to a couple of agents and then a couple of sitting head coaches in power conferences I talked to on Wednesday. And these are coaches that I don't think that they would be considered for the Louisville job. But them talking, and they talk to coaches, and they basically, you know, it's like, it is Louisville. Like, you know, one coach said, if I was the head coach, like, I'm the head coach here, but if I was the head coach at school X, which is also, you know, a top 20 job, he's like, I'm leaving that job for Louisville. I'm just telling you right now, I'm leaving that job to go to Louisville. Now, it's never as simple as that, Hartzell. You always have to, and I think this part gets lost a bit every time these big jobs are open. I think sometimes people underestimate just how many factors are go into what would make one coach at a really good job leave for another job, like on the level of Louisville. It can, you know, family situation, wife being okay with it. Yes, the money dictates a ton of it. But coaches are just not as willing to jump to the big job in 2022 the way that they were in 2002 and certainly in the 80s and 90s when this was, social media didn't exist and it was just, this was the game. Like, it was rare when a coach would truly pass on an opportunity to go to a bigger kind of place. Just didn't happen. So, I don't know who Louisville's going to get. Kenny Payne is going to be the name that gets a lot of run, and understandably so. He played there, was an assistant at Kentucky, now he's with the Knicks. But it will be interesting because we have Maryland and Louisville now competing, and
that's not that. Those aren't apples to apples, are they?
They're pretty
Maryland
close.
Maryland and Louisville.
They're pretty close.
Really?
Yeah, pretty close. Yeah, I had three coaches tell me. I talked to three coaches about this specifically. One told me Maryland definitely better than Louisville, and the two others said Louisville better than Maryland. And these are sitting head coaches in power conferences. So yeah, it's not a clean sweep there. I think Louisville's the better job. But Maryland, you're the biggest program in that region. I think you're bigger than Georgetown, and you're closer to more talent. You're in the. I don't want to say you're in the tougher conference.
Yeah, but Maryland's
the ACC
not
could
be. Are we going to call Maryland a basketball school?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. What else are you going to call it?
I mean, lacrosse.
Are you kidding me, Hartzell?
It's a basketball school, man. Like, what are we talking about?
It's a founding member of the ACC.
They haven't been good in a while, guys.
Again,
okay, Georgetown.
They actually would have. They were like Louisville. Yeah, they were like Louisville in 2020. They were going to be a high seed had there been, like, again, some, unfortunately, like, comments like that. You're not entirely wrong, Hartzell, but I do think, like, comments like that are colored by the fact that we never had a 2020 NCAA tournament, and, like, Maryland legitimately had a team that would have been good enough to make the Elite Eight in 2020. So had that happened, Mark Turgeon could still be there right now. If Louisville had gone to the Elite Eight that same year, Chris Mack could still be coaching there right now. So it's just the influence that NCAA tournament appearances and runs have on how people consider programs, it carries a lot of weight. So I understand what you're saying. Maryland has not been in the past 8 years what it was in the 2000s. I get that. But it wasn't it wasn't floundering entirely. It's just that Turgeon wasn't as majorly successful as they wanted him to be. But they did have a really, really good team in 1920. They were quality second weekend level kind of team. And the difference between those jobs, I don't think is that grand. I think that Louisville is a top 10 job, although, again, maybe not right now with all the circumstances, but broadly speaking, I think Louisville has to be considered a top 10 job. And I think broadly speaking, Maryland has to be considered a top 20 job. I would rank the Cards ahead of the Terps, but I don't think it's that big of a gap.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting place that we've ended up there. Cause yeah, you're right. You've got a Maryland opening. Now you've got a Louisville opening, you know, Big Ten, ACC, but man, I mean, we all know Kentucky basketball in that state. Like, those people are rabid. Like, they are out of control crazy about hoops, man. That's just not the case in Maryland. Sorry. Like, it's just not.
Like, I mean, yes and no. Like, the rabidness and, frankly, some of the despicable behavior by some of these Maryland fans that just had no shame and were just relentless on Mark Turgeon, booing him, making his family uncomfortable. Like, there's something to be said for that faction of a fan base, too. It's what led Mark Turgeon to just quit in the middle of December, early December. Yeah. He wasn't going to put himself and his family through this anymore. It's not easy for a coach to actually get to that point where it's like, they don't want to do that. Mark Turgeon didn't want to just say, yeah, I've spent a significant portion of my professional career trying to build something special at a really proud place like Maryland. I'm not going to do this anymore. It's the middle of the season. This is going to be a very public, scrutinized decision. So you're right. The fervor in the state of Kentucky with UK Hoops and Louisville as well outpaces Maryland, but it's not like Maryland's fan base is it's all that docile. That is definitely not the case, because if it was, we'd still see Turgeon on the sideline.
Okay, fair. How long are we giving Chris Mack before he shows up at the desk sitting alongside the likes of yourself at CBS Sports or ESPN or something? Like, are we going to see him, or you think he's just going to lay low for a little bit before he resurfaces? Because he's still young by coaching standards, Matt. Like, he's going to get another crack at this if he wants to.
He will. That's a good question. I don't know. Chris Mack certainly has on-camera presence. If he wants to do anything in regard to TV, it wouldn't surprise me. I don't think that'll happen. Anything's possible, right? Like, if Chris Mack, if for whatever reason, like CBS or Turner said, hey, you want to come and talk on the desk and talk about the tournament that's here, those kind of opportunities are borderline irresistible to coaches. And frankly, the agents of those coaches who say, this is as high profile as you can get in terms of just keeping your name and face out there. Don't know if that means anything to Chris Mack, but I would think that he might just enjoy himself and not coaching for the next couple of months. And then maybe next year we see him involved. Maybe not. I honestly don't know. I think he could have success working on the media side if he wants to do that, but maybe he doesn't. Maybe he just wants to just, you know, live life out of the spotlight for a little bit and just see where he feels a year from now when he will get calls about job opportunities, but in particular 2 years from now. I could see this going many different ways with Chris Mack, but I think he coaches again. Some people have said, you know, I'm not so sure. He's 52. He's been really good. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, it's been, I haven't gotten to February yet, and there's two high profile jobs. I think there's a chance, and I'm not even alluding to a specific one, but I'm just saying, like, now that there are two open, I think there's a chance we could actually get to a third job in a power conference that opens at some point in February.
Yeah, there's a couple coaches that are, I mean, part of me thought about taking the conversation in this route. I know it gets you uncomfortable. You get a little squirmy, Matt, when we talk about coaches.
I'm just not
going to
speculate. That's all. But like,
I'm not
going
to do it to you, but like, yeah, I mean, just go ahead and look at some of the standings right now. Like, there are some big boy schools with a lot of quan with basketball teams that are just flailing out there. I mean, just big programs that just aren't in a good place. So, yeah, I don't think that's you going out on a limb at all. But I won't pin you down on that because I'm a nice guy. Let's talk about some – here's what we're going to do. Let's hit pause. We talked about Chris Mack. He gone. Well, I want to look ahead to this weekend's games. There are some big boy games, SEC Big 12 challenges this weekend. That should be a lot of fun. We'll talk about those. But I do want to give you a chance, Matt, to just kind of recap, like, what stood out to you through the first couple days of the week. If you want to talk about a UCLA-Arizona game that nobody listening watched besides mm-hmm. you, because that game tipped at 11 o'clock Eastern time on a Tuesday night, you can talk about that. Auburn skates by on the road, which is funny. They won by one at Missouri. We talked earlier in the week about, hey, Auburn, you haven't really done much on the road. You haven't really done much away from that snake pit where you play your home games, and then they almost lose at lowly Missouri in the midweek. A couple of teams, Duke, I mean, they skate by against lowly Clemson, sorry Server, winning by two at home at Cameron. So I'll let you take this wherever you want, my man, but what stood out to you so far from this week's games?
First of all, we'll start with UCLA Arizona, and you got to realize many of the folks listening to this fine podcast, they are the diehards. They're coming to listen to, not me, they're coming to listen to you wax poetic on the joy that is men's Division I college basketball. So they were dialed in, at least some of them.
Hang on, before you break down the box score, would that game have been better served if it was on at 8 o'clock Eastern on Pac-12 Network?
Ooh.
As opposed to 11 o'clock Eastern on the Worldwide Leader? Because, I mean, let's be honest. Like, there were about 500,000 people who watched that game. Nobody watched that game. I mean, it was on at an impossible time. 500,000
is not insignificant, though. I wonder if, yeah, you're probably right. Maybe in the 500,000-600,000 range. It's better to be on ESPN than the Pac-12 Network every single time. Doesn't matter when.
Regardless of time.
That's right.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, not even a question. Pac-12 Network's not even available in most households. So, yeah, that's what had to be done. But I get your question, and this was a rescheduled game because the initial meeting was postponed because of COVID pauses. But UCLA gets a highly significant win, you know, to validate what it was in the preseason as a top 5-10 level team. It certainly looked like that. Arizona was bizarrely bad. Like, just in terms of shooting, Kirk Arisa wasn't good at all. And I thought I'm not going to burrow into the box score here on you, buddy. But UCLA winning, I thought, was important for the Pac-12 race. Arizona had begun to separate just a little bit, and now I think it's more of a, okay, we'll see who's going to take this thing. And USC, by the way, is still lingering. Just a two-loss team for the Trojans there, so keep an eye on that.
USC could walk down Times Square right now in their full warm-ups and jerseys and everything, and they would go completely unnoticed.
Incorrect. People know what the USC logo
including
is. I'm not saying they're
Andy
getting mobbed.
Enfield, that very handsome head coach of theirs. I mean, nobody knows these guys. Is he still the head coach?
Yes, he's still the head coach. Also, a Maryland vacancy candidate, in my opinion. But yes.
Really? Interesting.
He went to grad school there. He's from the area. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, compared to Southern Cal, people in College Park do care about college basketball. So can't fault him there if he decides
you're
to
right. But on that note, and we will not harp on this too long, like, if you're Andy Enfield, why would you not just continue to stay at a place with supreme job security, much better weather, no pressure, and you can, like, coach the next 7 to 10 years of your life? Like, you know, it depends on what you want, right? There are people that could be employed at USC in Andy Enfield's position and be dying to go to Maryland. And then there are others who would say, no, like, I have it made here. Like, I can comfortably live, compete. He made the Elite Eight last year, had, you know, a top three NBA pick. I find those situations fascinating. But yes, Enfield, I think, is among the candidate pool to be considered to go to Maryland. Whether or not he'll be picked and he would even want to go is another question altogether. So UCLA beats Arizona. That was the biggest result from Tuesday that I think I wanted to touch upon. Illinois, by the way, winning at home against Michigan State in an ugly game without its two best players, I thought was important. The Big Ten race continues to be fascinating. But we'll get into that maybe on another episode. But the Big Ten is actually, like, developing into a 4 or 5 team race, which I think is pretty cool. On last night, on Wednesday, I mean, to me, the story has to be Marquette. I'm trying to think of what the parallel would be for you college football folk here.
Did you sign an NIL deal with Marquette? Like, are you being paid to promote that program?
Dude, this team was picked 9th in the Big East in the preseason. It was 8-6 on January 1st. It is peeled off 7 consecutive wins over teams like Providence, Villanova, Xavier, Seton Hall's flailing. Kevin Willard, another Maryland candidate. Seton Hall, though, not exactly helping his case. Point is, Marquette has actually beaten good teams, has 3 road wins in that stretch. And Shaka Smart, like, big picture, this isn't going to be surprising to people. Oh, Shaka Smart went to Marquette. They're going to get in the tournament. Yeah, he's a pretty good coach, right? Nah, like, Marquette was not supposed to be or expected to be a tournament team. Maybe not even an NIT level going into the season. But it's been, dude, it also has a win over Illinois going to the tournament, win over West Virginia, probably going to the tournament. And so we can get into anything you'd like to from Wednesday. But I wanted to at least touch upon the 73-63 win on the road. Justin Lewis, who I know. He walks down Times Square. No one knows who he is. That's fine.
Is that your impression of me? That's how I
sound? He's a freshman. No one should know who he is. Dude is phenomenal. He has been one of the most surprising players in the country this season. Against Seton Hall, he could not be stopped. 33 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 steals. Dude has been on fire as of late. Actually entering into the conversation for Big East Player of the Year. And if Marquette continues this, he's got a long way to go, and we've actually got a lot. I think I mentioned this on a previous College Sports Now episode. We have a lot of viable first, second, third team All-America candidates. It's really fun this season. So Justin Lewis has plenty of competition, but I mean, past four games, 18 points, 21 points, 20 points, 33 points. Against Xavier earlier this week, 20 points, 13 rebounds. You know, he's been huge. He's not everything for Marquette, but man, his presence and emergence has been significant as a second year, technically as a second year player, but he's listed as a freshman. Him, Daryl Morcel, Maryland transfer, a lot of Maryland content on this podcast. Did not see that coming. Tyler Kolek, also, you know, 6'3 guard, transfer from George Mason. They've been good. So I just wanted to at least give a little bit of shine to Marquette. What else from Wednesday for you stood out? You want to talk about the Canes half-court buzzer beater?
I mean,
Virginia Tech.
Look,
Charlie Moore.
Virginia Tech's in a bad way right now. They're in a bad space.
Very bad.
You got to give credit to Miami. I mean, we've talked about how down the ACC is this year, but I mean, the Canes are alone atop the ACC standings. I mean, they're just doing their thing. And that win last night, if you didn't see it, tie game, Miami inbounding at half court. Actually, it was like in front of Virginia Tech's bench. But yeah, I mean, dude threw up a 50-footer off glass as time expired. Blouses. Miami wins in Blacksburg at the Castle.
I know. Why did we call it the Castle, by the way? I haven't
Castle
been.
Coliseum.
I assume.
Are you serious? Am I dropping knowledge
right.
on you on
that's
a college
right.
basketball I'm... show?
That's
Boy,
right.
you hate
that's
to
right.
see it.
That's right, Castle Coliseum. Listen, that was a rare miss by me, but I'm thinking Castle, you know, like, you know, medieval times.
I'm thinking about White Castle because you're a Northeastern guy, and that's like that's what y'all do up there. That's like y'all's Waffle House.
Not me. Yeah, Waffle House is, you know, 1,000 times better than White Castle, obviously. Big win. Miami's probably going to the tournament. I highlighted them recently on CBSSports.com on the court report. This program, real quick on this, when the FBI stuff came out in 2017, Miami was attached loosely to some of these things because it was recruiting a player that was like, you know, Nasir Little, who wound up going to North Carolina and all this. So Miami had like this, a little bit of a cloud connected to it. And then when the trials happened, the federal government completely exonerated Miami's program entirely. Like, you know, RB, sorry about that. Didn't mean to rope you into this. And it essentially set Miami's recruiting back a year and a half. And then a year after that, they had more injuries. They lost more players to injury and like total games missed than any other power conference team. So this was a good program essentially until the FBI stuff happened. Then that set them back 2 years. Then they had a horrific year of injuries. And now they're actually back. Coach L, Jimmy Larrañaga, going to get to the tournament. And there was also like murmurs like, is Larrañaga going to retire at this point? I don't know about that, man. 15-5 team. And I think that they're going to be heading to the NCAA tournament. I don't know if they're a second weekend threat, but as we speak here on a Thursday morning, 7-2 in the league. They're tied in the loss column with Duke and hello, surging Notre Dame. I owe Mike Bray a call, I think. They're doing quite well for themselves. But yeah, that was an awesome
next season. By the way, Miami's next couple weeks, not exactly a cakewalk. I know the ACC's down, but
yeah,
they'll win at Georgia Tech because the Jackets are lifeless. But Notre Dame, they got to go to Charlottesville. Oh, they get Georgia Tech again. Okay, well, that helps. At Wake, at Louisville. I'm just saying. You know, dude. I mean, like they're not gonna finish. They're not gonna be the one seed when the ACC tournament tips off in Brooklyn. But yeah, nice season so far.
Jackets damaging the Florida State at large case though. They get the win on Wednesday, home by 14 over FSU.
It's a silly game.
It is a silly game.
That's why, like we like to talk gambling on the football version of the show because we sort of have an idea who's good in college football. You have to be certifiably insane to bet on midweek college basketball, or any day of the week for that matter, in January and February. You just don't know. Except for Norlander's Marquette Golden Eagles, who are on a heater.
Well,
other than them, stay away. Just stay away.
We'll stay in the Big East, and we have to talk Friars. Providence, man. Ed Cooley, I said he needs to be on the list. Whether that list is 4 people, 6 people, 8 people, or 10, Louisville vacancy, Ed Cooley. Heck, make it for Maryland too. How about this? How about this little? I don't want to call it a factoid because it's based in opinion. But do you realize that as far as coaches are concerned, and I've actually never talked to this with Ed directly about it, but do you realize that like Providence within the Big East, which is now 11 schools, I'm going to read off the Big East schools to you right now. Okay. The Big East, as it's currently constituted, includes Providence, Marquette, Villanova, UConn, Xavier, St. John's, Creighton, Butler, Seton Hall, Georgetown, and DePaul. Does it surprise you to learn that as far as the coaching fraternity, head coaches, assistant coaches, people that have been in this for a long time, they would consider the job at Providence, the Providence job, not the stature of the program, the job itself and everything that comes with it, to be at best the 10th out of 11 jobs in the Big East? Does that surprise you, Hartzell?
I mean, it's better than DePaul, isn't it? DePaul's terrible. I know you're in Chicago.
People say DePaul is better.
Well,
because you're in Chicago. I disagree with this. But yes, have had conversations with three coaches in the past, I don't know, call it month, in different parts of the country. Some are assistant, two assistants and a head coach. And all three of them, I can't remember how we got onto this with the first one. Then I subsequently asked the other two. All three of them said DePaul is a better job than Providence.
Well, I mean, I don't want to get sidetracked here. To your initial point or slash discussion question, I wouldn't argue with that. I mean, look at those schools, man. I mean, the Big East has obviously built itself as a basketball first conference. I mean, those places are basketball crazy. Creighton, hello, yeah. Like those people are crazy for basketball. We know about Seton Hall, St. John's, Butler, like all that. Yeah, I'm not going to fight you on that, man. I won't fight you. Although Providence does have a very nice arena, right? They're at the Dunkin' Donuts Center. They got a nice
It's
spot.
Definitely not nice. I would not define it as nice.
Wow, really? Throwing shade?
The dunk? The dunk. No, they embrace the oversized but beloved frat house vibe that it is. Like, that's not a nice arena. No.
Okay, wow. I didn't know we were going to put Providence's facilities in a body bag here on the show, but here we are. Phenomenal.
Here we are. Ed Cooley has PC at 17-2. Leading the Big East right now with a 7-1 record. I don't believe it's ever started 7-1 in league play. And it hasn't been 17-2 in 45 years. So props to Ed Cooley. I mentioned Marquette was picked 9th in the preseason. Providence was picked 7th. Was not considered to be an NCAA tournament level team. Not only is it going to the tournament, Providence has a viable chance here. And it's going to take a stumble or two. It is. I think that's inevitable. It's kind of playing above its head. In fact, the metrics still, how about this? KenPom has the 17-2 Providence Friars as the number 47 team in the country.
No respect.
No respect whatsoever. Now, part of that is they got mollywopped by a bad Virginia team. That loss margin is going to affect you. And they got destroyed on the road, non-competitive, by more than 20 points, more than 30 points against Marquette. And so those will hurt your efficiency margins and numbers. But I'm a believer, and Providence, I think, has a real chance at a top four seed, which is just, I love these plot twists, man. I love every season we get something like this. So
friend
I wanted to at least mention.
By the way, friend of the program, Jerry Palm, he's got the Friars as a two seed.
Can't argue it right now. I don't think they're going to hold that because I think losses are coming.
Still holding.
But I know. Elsewhere, you mentioned, I believe, Davidson highlighted the Wildcats this week on CBSSports.com, and the Norlander Jinx is alive and well. A 15-game winning streak is gone after VCU held on late to win on the road. Tough for Davidson. It's still a tournament team. Good for the A-10 because I don't know if that league can be a two-bid league this season, but if it's going to happen, you're going to either need Davidson to maintain a gaudy record and then not win the auto bid, or Davidson to take a couple more losses, win the auto bid, and then maybe a VCU squeaks in because, like, St. Bonaventure, don't want to get too deep in the A-10 weeds. You know, Hartzell gets really scared. I get all that. But, like, the Bonnies, the alma mater of the biggest newsbreaker in all of NBA, Adrian Wojnarowski, they were getting plenty of buzz in the preseason for being not just the best team in the A-10, but top 25 level. Team was ranked in the preseason. It was first time they were in the polls since the early 1970s, man. Anyway, they have disappointed. They got beat by George Mason on Wednesday night. So St. Bonaventure suddenly doesn't have an NCAA tournament profile anymore. That hurts the A-10. The league will struggle to get two bids. I still think it can get there, but it's not going to be easy. And that was an important result on what was a relatively like light Wednesday night. It's been an interesting week. The only other thing we haven't talked about, I don't have too much interest in Duke barely getting by Clemson. I will just rewind real quick.
Did you know Auburn, that this is Coach K's last year, by the way? Were you aware of that?
You know what? How about this real quick? I actually mentioned this in passing in my power rankings that are up at CBSSports.com on Thursday. All seriousness, I took a beat to think about this yesterday. And to this point in the season, Hartzell, just to this point, it actually feels like the coverage on TV, podcasts, you know, print, digital, all of it. Take all of the college basketball media we consume. It actually feels like the Coach K farewell season has been reasonably covered. It hasn't been too over the top, syrupy, in your face. Would you agree? I actually feel like it was going to be worse than it has been so far.
Well, look at the calendar, my man. I mean, look, when the NFL wraps up in a couple of weeks, after the Chiefs win another Super Bowl in a couple of weeks, and there's nothing else happening, the MLB's in a lockout, NBA season is dragging on, people are going to look around and be like, hey, guess what? Duke's sitting there at 20-3. Let's go. Like, they're making their last trip to the Dean Dome. Coach K's farewell tour. Dude, in a month from now, it will be insufferable. I'm telling you.
You might be right, but to this point, I thought it's actually been pretty.
I mean, it's fine. Like, it's fine. Like, it's probably where it should be. But this is part of the larger issue of how college basketball is covered by most casual, and I'm raising my hand here, college basketball fans, which is like nobody's really coming under the tent until late February. And so when you get like people like my parents who are like, oh, I didn't know Coach K was retiring. I saw it.
Your parents know this.
I saw it on CNN, Stephen.
Really? You think so? Do you think your parents know right now this is the final season for Mike Krzyzewski?
Yes, because they listen to the show. They support me. Thanks, guys.
Oh, okay. There we go.
Do your parents listen to the Ion College Basketball?
Not a chance. Not a chance.
Really?
And I've talked about that on that podcast. My wife has never listened to an episode.
Well, my wife doesn't listen to any of my stuff. She doesn't know what I do on Twitter. She literally thinks my job consists of goofing around on the internet all day.
Yeah.
She's
my wife's not quite
off.
Like that, but yeah, same thing. Like, she's not on Twitter. She doesn't know what I'm tweeting about. She's got no idea. She knows I'm on it, but like, she doesn't have any
idea. She doesn't know that you got a blue check and that you command a certain amount of respect on the interwebs. She doesn't know this.
I think she has a sense of that, but
like, you couldn't call like St. Elmo's Steakhouse in Indy the week of the Final Four and be like, yeah, this is Matt Norlander. I need a table for 12 at the window. This is Matt Norlander of CBS Sports. You could make that happen?
No, I can't make that happen.
You, Nance, Raft, Grant Hill, Clark Kellogg, a couple of other producers. You couldn't make that happen?
I don't think I can make that happen.
Oh, come on. Don't sell yourself short, big guy. By the way, you don't think I can hang with the A-10 talk? You said I was scared to talk A-10? You want to talk about Duquesne? You want to talk about G-Dub? You want to talk about the Rams of Fordham? Let's go all day, man. I can wax.
Pop quiz.
I don't want to talk about that.
Head coach of Fordham is who?
I don't even know what state Fordham's in, actually.
That can't be true. That can't be.
It's in New York, but outside of that.
Which borough? There are five of them. Can you name all five New York City boroughs?
Server. Help me.
Let's go. No,
hang on.
Go.
There's Brooklyn.
Yes.
There's the Bronx.
That's right.
There's Queens.
That's right. Come on.
Oh, you're forgetting the big one.
Manhattan?
Yep.
There we go.
That's a borough? Okay.
Yep. And now the only one you haven't gotten is the one that trips people up.
Staten Island.
There. Look at you.
I'm a geography guy. I do flex geography.
Which one of those five is where Fordham is located?
That would be the Bronx.
You cheated. All right. Good to know.
Did I get that right?
You did.
Amazing. The only thing I know about the Atlantic 10 is that Richmond waitlisted me coming out of high school circa 2001. And I'll be honest, I'm glad I didn't go there. You know why, Norlander? You ever been to Richmond? You ever been to U of R? Spiders?
I have been to the city of Richmond. I have never been to Richmond's campus.
Well, there's two very different Richmonds. There's where VCU is, and then there's where U of R is, okay? Those are two very different cities. U of R, and I don't know if this is still the case, they have a lake in the middle of campus. I'm pretty sure the lake's still there. but half of the campus, like, they separate the genders.
Excuse me.
There's all female dorms on one side. There's all male dorms on the other. And, like, the only time people interact is, like, at meals and classes and stuff. It's kind of weird.
I thought you say they're going to, like, meet at the lake and they, like, all wade into the water together.
I'll meet you at the lake. So, anyway, U of R, you waitlisted me. So, I had to go to the University of Virginia instead. Harrisonburg, JMU. Let's go. By the way,
I got housing waitlisted at UMass, and that's why I didn't go to UMass. So,
UMass Amherst?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hockey school, man. You did the right thing.
Yeah, no regrets.
We've been talking a lot about coaching and, like, you know, the whole situation with Chris Mack being out at Louisville. We are actually going to talk to a college basketball head coach, Jeff Bowles. He's the head man of the Ohio Bobcats, balling in the Mac this year. He's going to join the show coming up next. Stick around.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, back here on College Sports Now, as promised, Coach Bowles of the Ohio Bobcats joins the show. Coach, appreciate you joining us. You're having a great season. You got a monster game on deck at Buffalo Friday night, little national TV action on the U. You got to be excited about the game.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on. And, you know, so far so good. We're 15-3 and you know, we lost to Toledo the other night, lost to LSU in Kentucky. And, you know, love our team. And like you said, we got a big game Friday night.
For the audience listening to this that might have last seen you guys play in the tournament, you beat Virginia 2021. You go and then you play against Creighton. And then you obviously had Jason Preston, who became one of the, you know, best stories of the college basketball season a year ago, Jeff. This team doesn't have Jason. He left. He you know, made the decision to move on and pursue his NBA career. How has your group been able to adjust without him? And specifically, obviously, Mark Sears has moved into that that role at running the point. But as a head coach, I presume you, correct me if I'm wrong, like, have you ever been in this position where you've had to replace someone that talented running your offense as a head coach, and have you been able to do it to get to 15-3 at this point?
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think if you really look at it, not a lot of people really know. Like, last year, we on paper had everyone coming back. And as we all know, in the world of college basketball, that's very rare it's going to happen. But, you know, we lost Jason Preston early to the NBA, which, you know, at our level, that doesn't happen, kids leaving early, you know, to declare. And then, you know, our starting two guard, London McDay, took a leave of absence this year. And then our starting center, who averaged 15-8, tore his ACL and MCL, and, you know, is redshirting this year. So we've had to change kind of who we are a little bit and how we play without those guys. But Mark Sears has stepped up and, you know, really looks like a four-year starter for us. And obviously we have Ben Vanderplas, who's a great player, had a great game against Virginia. And Jason Carter transferred back, you know, from Xavier to Ohio University, who's really helped us. So we have a different team, different identity, but, you know, the results have been really good so far.
How's your league looking at this point? You guys are right there with Toledo. The MAC, I think, doesn't consistently get its due for being, you know, that kind of league that, for the most part, you might have one or two teams that are good enough to be, say, 12 seeds, right? And then you might have one or two or three teams at the bottom that are just bad. But usually, like, the rest in the middle, Jeff, they tend to just be teams that are 100 to 200 in the rankings. And it always seems to be a cram and a crunch. What are your thoughts on what the MAC is this season versus maybe what it was a year ago or 2 years ago? And if the challenge with this new roster is kind of what you expect it to be, or if the slope might be even a little bit steeper in conference play.
Yeah, I think if you look at it, you know, you got Toledo, us, Akron, you know, Buffalo, Kent State, you know, Miami was playing well. You know, they've been a little inconsistent lately, but you know, the top level teams I think are good enough to beat a lot of teams in the NCAA tournament. And you know, it's kind of been proven through the last years with, you know, Buffalo, obviously ourselves last year. But you know, it's a very good league. It's normally a cyclical league, right, where your juniors and seniors dominated, where, you know, every 4 years it kind of, you know, changes. There hasn't been a repeat winner, I don't think, in a long time. But you know, with the transfer portal the way it is, you know, we have three new coaches this year. You know, there's been a lot of transfers that have come into the league. And I think, you know, a lot of these teams are still trying to get their identity and their chemistry. You know, they're better now than they were in the non-conference. So it's a great league. I mean, I played in this league. I was an assistant coach in this league and now a head coach. You know, it's a great league.
Coach, you mentioned the non-conference, and your team took on Kentucky and LSU before getting into league play. How much, looking back on it, do you appreciate having the opportunity to kind of measure your team up against, you know, in the case of Kentucky and LSU, two really good teams from the SEC? I know that was a while ago, but do you feel like that's really helped your team now that you're in the meat of your conference schedule?
Yeah, you know, at the end of last year, I was going to try to play, you know, every high major I could in a non-conference. And, you know, I knew it was going to be tough with the team we had coming back and our success. And we called every Big Ten school, every ACC school, every SEC school. And really the only two that agreed to play us were Kentucky when they found out Jason was leaving. And you know, we told him Dwight had torn his ACL, but there was no media coverage. And we had to, you know, promise him that it did happen. And then, you know, Will Wade at LSU, you know, that was probably the shortest conversation to get a game ever. You know, the easiest to get a game. But I appreciate those guys playing us because, you know, we don't get those opportunities, you know, with the success we had. And, you know, we went down competing to win and you know, we played Kentucky really tough. I think it was maybe a tie game with 10, 12 minutes to go in the game, and they made their run. And then LSU, you know, we got down really big early and then came back to tie it up with about, you know, 8 minutes to go and ended up losing that game. But the experiences were awesome. You know, the LSU crowd was great. You know, Brian Kelly was introduced that night with his Southern accent. And, you know, just a great atmosphere for our guys to play in.
You take that as a compliment, though, right, Coach? I mean, if you're calling, you know,
hold up,
ACC
that
and
was
Big
the
Ten
game?
Schools, then they're not wanting to play with you. That's a compliment, right?
100%. And, you know, I always tell people it's better than the alternative if everyone's trying to call you to play. And but yeah, that was the game. Brian Kelly, we saw I forget Mike the Tiger. We went out and saw the live Tiger, and you know, I thought all the media was there to cover our game, but it was to cover his press conference.
Jeff, I did not realize the Brian Kelly accent game was your game. I did not. Oh my gosh, that's too good. By the way, kind of inside college basketball, if you will, when you mentioned that thing about Will Wade, this is something that basically no one would really know, but Will Wade is the only, I believe he is the only head coach at the power conference level who solely controls his team scheduling. Like a lot of head coaches at that level, they will maybe work in concert with an assistant or a dobo, a director of basketball operations. Will Wade is different. He does not want anyone else doing his schedule. It is only him. If you want to schedule LSU, you have to talk to Will Wade. So I found it interesting that you brought that specific part up and saying it was like the fastest thing ever, because maybe even you were surprised. I don't know if you even knew that, Jeff, but maybe you were even surprised at how quick that got done.
No, I mean, it was like he called my assistant and said, "Hey, you guys want to play?" He said, "Yes." He's like, "I'll send a contract out tonight." We end up signing it, send it back the next day, and the game was scheduled. That's how easy it was.
That's the dude. That is the dream. Because every spring, summer, with regularity, you know, I will hear from head coaches at mid majors or the occasional mid major assistant, and be like, you know, we're still starving. Like, is there any like, it's if you're getting to the point where you're texting or calling me to either lament about your scheduling or see if there might be anyone that might be able to help you. I know the plight from afar, obviously. I wanted to ask you about something I saw across my Twitter feed earlier on Thursday that dealt with football, but give us as much, you know, as you can on the basketball side, given where you are right now. Jeff Bowles, you know, you've been a head coach here for a number of years, but you also were a longtime assistant at Ohio State to Thad Matta. That was pre-transfer portal era, but you've worked at that level. As someone now who is in charge of a high-level mid-major program, and like the football stuff is like now coming out because the season's over and it's people talking, you know, anonymously giving quotes about how brutal it is. What about for you and your staff? Like, you've got, when you get to the point where you're going to be, again, a top 100 team, good chance to represent this conference in the NCAA tournament, if you can get the work done, you know that some of your guys are going to be courted through one way or another to potentially try, you know, leave your program. Like, how do you handle that? And is it even something that, to a certain extent, you don't have control over? I'm always curious about the head coach at the mid-majors level, how he deals with that kind of stuff, because you know it's in the air and it's inevitable at some point.
Yeah, I think you do have control and you don't have control. And I think it starts with the type of character kid that you recruit. You know, we have a group of high character guys. You know, we try to recruit high character, love the game, that want to be pros and want to earn their degree. You know, we have a 3.25 QM GPA as a team, and you know, Ben Vanderplas for the last 2 years could have went anywhere he wanted. You know, Minnesota was he's from Wisconsin. You know, could have went there, and you know, he had some overtures. But his dad told me after year one, like, he loves the culture, loves Ohio University, loves his teammates, like, he's not leaving. And last year we had four kids transfer who didn't play a whole lot, and we could have easily had the wrong four transfer. Jason Preston could have played at any Division I school in the country, high major. You know, Ben Vanderplas the same way. And I think you have to have a great relationship. It's an everyday deal. You know, the most important kids in a recruiting class are the kids you have on your own campus. And, you know, it's going to be a year-to-year deal. And you know, I think we were pretty fortunate that we had our core guys come back for this year. And I think when you have a great culture and you know, you win and it's fun, you know, it'll be a little easier. But there's always going to be that question mark in your head. That who are you going to lose and when are you going to lose them?
Yeah, last year was the highest ever in terms of players in the portal. It's not expected to be as quite as crazy this year, but we still have the COVID bonus year, and that's also factoring in as well. As we get ready to, I got one more for me, and then I think Hartzell's got one when we can get you out of here, Jeff. Thanks again for joining us. As we kind of get ready to flip into February, I was hoping you could give listeners an idea of, at this point in the season, or maybe like a week or two from now, is it really, you know, the dog days, so to speak? And if so, why is that the case? Like, you know, you guys are with these players, summer workouts, seeing your face, hearing your voice a ton. Like, is there actually a psychological wall that maybe some teams hit once we get around Valentine's Day? Because, like, you're just so eager for March to get here. Is, in some ways, I guess the question I'm trying to ask you, Jeff, is the next week or two, is this actually the hardest stretch of the season for a number of factors, or is that maybe a little bit of a misconception?
No, I think it's real. And, you know, I think there's some factors involved. You know, a lot of teams go through the, you know, winter break where they're doing nothing but basketball, and then school starts back up. And when you lose, it's a grind. You know, it's like it wears on you and can become contagious. And right around that, like you said, that first 2 weeks of February, you see teams kind of separate themselves. And, you know, we try to, you know, one thing I learned from Coach Matta was fresh minds and fresh legs. You know, it was always big. And I always thought that's why his teams were really good late in the year, because, you know, he did a great job of, you know, limiting the practice time and trying to keep them mentally fresh and physically fresh. So I've tried to do that in my 6 years of being a head coach as well. And, you know, I think you look at the COVID situation where teams getting games canceled, and, you know, now when do you add these games? Well, you know, we're going to be playing four games in 8 days multiple times probably coming up because of cancellations and rescheduling. And so you got to be very wary and careful of how you do and what you do. And, you know, certain teams that you play don't have that, you know, rescheduling, and, you know, might have that extra rest. So I think it's going to be a crazy last month and a half for a lot of people.
Coach, I'm going to let you go on an easy one. Who's got better suits, you or your radio play-by-play guy, Russ Eisenstein?
I'll go with myself, but I got a great story. So when I was at, might have been here, we played Villanova. And I'm thinking, like, I got this fresh, like, blue-green pinstripe suit, and I'm going to bring my A-plus game.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even close to Jay Wright. I was, like, a little disappointed. But his suit options are a little different than mine.
Yeah.
Wait a second. You thought you were showing up and one-upping the master, who, by the way, has bailed on that look altogether. It's a sartorial crime, but yeah.
Yeah, my wife is very disappointed. She loves the suit looks, and she's a big part of buying my suits and ties and matching everything up. And I came like correct, but I wasn't even close to Coach Wright.
He's the master. Yeah,
he's unreal.
That's a dapper man, Coach. Thank you so much for the time. Best of luck Friday at Buffalo and the rest of the way. We appreciate you joining us.
All right, thanks for having me on,
Maddie. That was good stuff, man. You before we get out of here. Maddie, you want to talk best games of the weekend? You want to kind of run through?
Stop doing that.
What?
You're trying to like Maddie. You're trying to rile our guy up, and it's not.
I'm not riled. Nice. We're good.
No, I think it's great. I mean,
I'll take Maddie. I got zero issue with Maddie.
Of all the nicknames he's used for Norlander, like Norley, like Maddie makes way more sense. I don't know why
I'm good with any of it. I've got a variety of nicknames. I just, for whatever reason, I'm that guy who I've been called all kinds of nicknames, and Maddie, Norley, Nordy, the nickname that shall not be repeated on this podcast that my other co-host insists on calling me, sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
So Maddie's good. I'm good with it.
It's the tone. Your tone's all wrong. You disrespected the guy.
Maddie.
I don't feel, I honestly don't feel disrespected.
He's a habitual line stepper, Maddie.
Yes, yeah, I am.
Over the line. Okay. Let's talk this weekend. Ohio at Buffalo, 7 Eastern, ESPNU Friday night. Jeff Bowles, big time game. Hopefully we didn't jinx him. Buffalo's actually got a good team, 10-7, but been a little bit rocky here in MAC play. So wanted to at least give.
I'll be watching that while that nor'easter just wreaks havoc here in Winston-Salem. Just havoc.
Absolutely. Friday is very quiet. So last week when we previewed the weekend, Friday had a couple of good games. We don't have that Saturday. I mean, what do you want from me? We're loaded. Loaded on games, man. I'm going to go in terms of, I'm not going chronological on you. I'm going in terms of relevance.
Okay.
Biggest one is at 6 Eastern on ESPN, Kentucky at Kansas. And I think College Game Day is on the road for the first time for the basketball end of it this weekend. The first two weekends they were in studio. Now they're going to Lawrence. Couple of top 10 level teams. Ochai Agbaji, oh, by the way, when Kansas won earlier in the week, double overtime against Texas Tech, Ochai Agbaji had 37. It was the most points in that building since Buddy Hield dropped 46 in triple overtime 6 years ago. So, I mean, UK at KU.
About 50 and 55 minute games. Just to put that out there. I mean, it helps when you're getting some bonus basketball, man. Am I wrong?
Huge game, whatever. So, Ochai Agbaji, here's the headline on it. Ochai Agbaji of Kansas, Oscar Tshiebwe of Kentucky, 1-2 right now, National Player of the Year frontrunner.
Wow.
Just so you're aware. I know Hartzell didn't have any idea about that. I'm just letting you know. There's a nice little crowded race that's developing, but in my opinion, if you made me vote today, right now, Ochai Agbaji would be my National Player of the Year ever so narrowly against Oscar Tshiebwe of Kentucky. Great matchup. I have been in that building for this matchup before. Kentucky at Kansas 6 years ago. Overtime game was incredible. Both these teams have the capacity to win the national championship this season. What do you want? Two blue bloods. These teams play at each other's venue every three seasons, essentially, because, you know, they play almost every season because Champions Classic with the rotation of that to start the season. And when they don't do that, the Big 12 SEC matchup puts these teams against each other, rotating home road venues. It's a great thing for college basketball. I love that we have a Big 12 SEC challenge at the end of January, non-conference stuff. We actually need a little bit more of that. That's the biggest one. Before I continue, any thoughts on Kentucky-Kansas?
Yeah, I'm taking Kentucky on the road to get the dub. You heard it here first. I'm not afraid. Okay. I'll step out there. I'll
certainly
take Kentucky.
Conceivable. It's obviously hard to win in that building, not impossible. Kansas doesn't lose a lot in Allen Fieldhouse, but I can see Kentucky getting it done. I'm going to save my pick. Listen to the Friday episode of Ion College Basketball where I will make my pick there. Second biggest game of the day? We got some tasty ones, but I'm going to go Baylor at Alabama. That's a 4 o'clock Eastern tip. This game will precede Kentucky at Kansas. Baylor trying to keep pace in the race for the number one overall seed. 18-2 on a three-game winning streak. In that three-game winning streak has achieved road wins against West Virginia and Oklahoma, which amount to quad one wins, even if they're not the high end of the schedule. Playing Alabama is going to be fascinating because Bama's the story. 13-7. This is a team that is developing the weirdest resume in college basketball at this point. Has lost to, albeit a good Iona team, for that level. Like Iona, it's Rick Pitino. What do you want from me? But still, Bama lost on a neutral to Iona, lost at a bad Memphis team. Got sideswiped in a quasi-home environment in Birmingham against Davidson. Lost at Mizzou. Lost at Georgia this week. 13-7. Meantime.
You can't do that.
I know. Meantime, by the way, Alabama has wins over Gonzaga, the number one team at KenPom. Houston, the number four team at KenPom, and has a nice win over LSU. If Alabama beats Baylor, the chaos man in me wants that to happen. I want to see Alabama get to the NCAA tournament with like a 21-13 or 21-14 record. But included in that are a win over Baylor Saturday. Oh, by the way, after this, it's at Auburn Tuesday and home to Kentucky on next Saturday.
That's what they do. They are.
I want Alabama
slayers.
To go 2-1 in its next three and then lose a home game to Mississippi State and fall at Vandy in February. I want this to be the most absurd resume ever. So that's what I'm rooting for there. That's the number two game of Saturday as far as I'm concerned. After that, those are the two biggest headliners. If you're looking for some intrigue, Tennessee at Texas, also SEC Big 12. There you're looking at an 8 o'clock tip, so this will follow Kentucky, Kansas. You got a nice, nice window there.
By the way, wink, wink, nudge, nudge on the 8 o'clock. That, in the industry, they call that the slide. That game will tip at 8:30.
Save this. Let's go. Let's closest to the hole without going over. What is your guess? Exact tip. And
for
document
Texas,
it.
Tennessee?
Yes.
8:25.
I'm going 8:07.
I mean, you're probably
8:07.
You're probably right. I mean, they wouldn't slide a game 25 minutes. I'm exaggerating for effect here, but like you won't see that game on like ESPN. It'll be airing for the first I bet you won't get that game on ESPN till the under 12 of the first half.
You're wrong. That's not going to happen.
Dude, these game I've been telling you this for years, Maddie. Right. You just don't want to hear it. These college basketball games, they take 2.5 hours, man.
They do not. They literally do not take 2.5 hours if it's regulation.
It's absurd, man. Let's go to the monitor. Let's check out how many tenths of a second we need to add back on.
In the NCAA, you might drive me to this.
Time. I mean,
the NCAA literally tracks game times because they want and need to know this stuff, so they have data on this. If you need me to get the data, I'll get it. Games are not taking 2.5 hours. I think the average college basketball game takes like 2 hours and 2 minutes. Just telling you.
Yeah, I'm not talking about average college basketball games. I'm not talking about LaSalle and Richmond. I'm talking about big boy, power conference, heavyweight basketball. You will not get Texas-Tennessee on your screens until about 9 minutes to go in the first half. I'm just telling you. It'll be airing right on the app or on ESPN3. Is ESPN3 still a thing? ESPN News, whatever. Doesn't matter.
All right, here we go. Marquette at Providence. I would be going to this game if I wasn't getting a bomb cyclone. And I don't even know if this game's getting played. 4:30, Fox Sports 1 Saturday. Phenomenal Big East matchup between the two most surprising teams in the conference, just screaming toward good seeds in the tournament. And are we going to play this game? I don't know. I don't know if weather's going to affect it at all. It's affecting my ability to go and travel and cover it.
Why wouldn't we get the game? It's in an indoor gymnasium. What's the problem?
Sometimes adverse weather can affect flights.
Take the subway.
Not,
I mean, what's the problem
take
here?
Are you talking to me? Or are you talking about like
I'm talking to these teams, man.
Subway? It's Marquette. They're flying from Wisconsin. If I'm Marquette, I'm actually making sure I'm hopping on the bird first thing Friday morning, get it done. So
yeah, there's no excuse here. I mean, unless you're
I think they're going to be able to play the game, but I just don't know how. Dude, again, between 2 and 20 inches What are we doing here?
Aren't y'all used to this? Isn't this what y'all sign up for when you live in,
all right. I'm just saying,
the armpit
I'm not,
of the
I'm
East
just
Coast?
Saying, I'm curious to see if how severe the weather is at 4:30 on Saturday. I'm not making the drive from Connecticut to Providence anymore, I don't think. I'd love to be wrong, but if we get a delay in the weather, yeah, I want to be at this game. Elsewhere, Xavier at Creighton, a couple of teams that could really use a win right about now. Xavier's in a better spot to make the tournament. Creighton has got to pick it up. It started nicely, but it's lost three of its past five games, and the wins have come over St. John's and DePaul. This is a home tilt. If Creighton wants to make the NCAA tournament, games like this feel like borderline necessary. There's another team that needs a win in order to keep its NCAA tournament hopes, I think, legitimate, and that's TCU, which hosts LSU. That's another Big 12 SEC. That's a Saturday tip. LSU got a come-from-behind home win on Wednesday night to beat a fraudulent Texas A&M team.
Wow.
So LSU at TCU, that's your nooner on ESPN2. Were you going to say something, Hartzell?
I hope Buzz Williams doesn't listen to the show because you called his team fraudulent and he will come to your
they
house
just don't
and
have
sweat
the
on
like,
you.
Okay. I don't take any joy in it, but like they have one of the worst non-conference schedules and they started with a gaudy record and they haven't proven it against hardly anyone. That's
Yeah, it's called Clemsoning. That's what it's called. Yeah,
okay. All right. So CBS, 12:30, Michigan at Michigan State. Michigan's been a disappointment, but if the Wolverines were able to go in to Breslin and steal this, then maybe we got a nice little plot twist there. So keep an eye.
They just went into Assembly Hall, didn't they? Or was that
they did.
I mean, come on.
I know. We got to see. We got to see what happens.
Juwan Howard and them boys.
We got to see what happens with that. And then if you want to keep eyes on the number one team in the country, Auburn at 2 o'clock on ESPN, hosts an Oklahoma team that got a majorly significant win Wednesday night at West Virginia to stop the bleeding, end a four-game losing streak. Oklahoma is 13-7. The question is whether Porter Mosier in his first season can get the Sooners to the tournament after taking the Loyola job. Big 12 has been rough. That's a tough spot at Auburn there. But if they win that, we might be leading with it on the Monday show. I don't know. So that's what you're looking at for the most part on Saturday, with all due respect to your Jackets hosting Miami.
Nobody cares.
Duke plays at Louisville, by the way. ACC's, like a lot of these Duke games are just not compelling at all. And then Sunday doesn't have a ton. Ohio State's going to play at Purdue at noon on CBS. Obviously a very good game. Ohio State, from a roster standpoint, has just been... How about this? They've got a player, they've got a former player, Keyshawn Woods. Last was in a uniform in 2019. Has a overseas career, but he's on this like little gap where he's not playing. Ohio State got a waiver to allow him to practice for 10 days with the team because they don't have enough bodies. That's how bad it is at Ohio State right now.
I was going to say, that seems bad.
It's bad. Hopefully they'll be better, at least a little better by the time they play at Purdue on Sunday. CBS, Nooner, as we call it in the biz. At least I call it that. That's the only Sunday game of like real relevance and note. Most of your stuff is going to be Saturday. So Friday, you're mostly clear. Sunday, Ohio State, Purdue, Nooner. Then we got the football championship games. Monday morning, right here, back at it, College Sports Now.
Who you got in the Super Bowl? Go ahead.
There's no teams in the Super Bowl yet, so we're going to save that pick until the matchups are finalized, my man.
No, I'm saying who's playing in the Super Bowl. I'm asking for your picks, like who you got.
Gotcha.
Who's playing? What are we talking about on Monday? Who's going to the big game?
I'm going Chiefs-Rams.
Chalky.
I have to. Nope. I'm more concerned with being accurate than I am with being counterculture.
I gotta work Saturday. I gotta go into the studio and run a game. I haven't done that in over a year. I don't know how it's gonna go.
Ohio play-by-plays guy's name in the middle of a podcast, like everyone knew who that is.
Russ Eisenstein, man. Have you not seen this guy's suits?
You're incredible, dude.
He's like the Dollar General Mike Breen. He's got the bang. Like that's his call. You don't know about this?
I'm unfamiliar.
Unbelievable. That's kind of disrespectful to Russ, actually. Right. In hindsight.
My apologies to Russ. But yeah, what game are you working on Saturday?
Dude, there's no way that I can make this game sound intriguing. I'll just say that it's Utah at Washington. I'll be on in a top 10 market. I'll be holding it down for the Huskies. But that's 1-10 in the Pac-12 Utah at 4-3 in the Pac-12 Washington in front of about, I don't know, 2,500 people at Alaska Airlines Arena, maybe.
It's rough.
Yeah, it is rough. I just hope I know how to take those guys on and off air, because if not, Serber's going to be really, really upset at me.
It's the grind.
Yeah, I need you to not be bad at this.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's going to be a coin flip one way or the other. Norlander, you will be doing the Ion College basketball Friday. That's where you will be making a pick on Kentucky, Kansas.
Yes.
Guess what, guys? He's going to go chalk there too. He's going to take.
You don't
Kansas.
Know that. I haven't even decided.
Yeah, you're a chalk guy, man. I mean, it's okay. It's okay. You like taking favorites. It's okay. So appreciate our man Coach Bowles joining the show. That was awesome. We'll have more head coaches on over the course of the season. Thanks to Jeff Bowles, the head coach of Ohio. For Serber, for Norlander, I'm Hartzell. No Nell spinning today. We'll talk music next week. You guys have a good weekend. Stay safe out there. Nor'easter, bomb cyclone, it's coming.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.